Good morning. Welcome, everyone. It's good to have you all here gathered together virtually in the State Board of Education board meeting as we get started. I'd like to begin by calling the roll, please. Ms. Cheadle, I believe you are muted.
Good morning. Ms. Williams-Bradley?
I thought you were calling my name. Here.
Mr. Vollenbach? Mr. Flanagan?
Here.
Ms. Hernandez?
Here.
Ms. Moniz? Mr. Bobek?
I believe, I believe the boardroom is muted.
Is muted too.
Sorry, we're making Jeremy run around. We're all three here.
Right. Ms. Moniz?
Here.
Mr. Bobek?
Here.
Mr. Vollenbach?
Here.
Superintendent Hoffmeister.
Here. All right. And we do have a quorum. Did we comply with the Open Meetings Act?
Yes, we did.
All right. Very good. And I just want to mention that we are having issues with internet stabilization. And so we continue to get messages across the screen on some of our devices here in the department that will say internet unstable. So if there are any issues related to frozen screens, it may be due to some of the construction and some of the other work that's going on here near the building. So we apologize for that, but we will carry on. And first, I would like to just mention that we are going to be very mindful of our guests who are with us, and we're going to start our board meeting with a little bit of a different order, but following this agenda here, with an update and discussion, possible action for COVID-19 response and operations. And we have two different presentations to provide for the board here today. The first is with our state interim epidemiologist, Dr. Jared Taylor, who is working very closely with the Department of Education as well as with many of our schools. And so I've asked that Dr. Taylor present to the board and also for that wider audience around what is right now a pressing issue related to quarantining and other issues that he would like to bring to the attention of the education community. Dr. Taylor, welcome.
And thank you. I appreciate you guys having me and fitting me in. I've got another meeting at 10 with the Tribal Health Authority, so I'm sorry to scramble your agenda there, but I appreciate the opportunity. Hopefully, everyone, as we've worked really hard throughout my tenure to make available in a variety of formats and manners, information regarding the kind of the basics of case investigation and what it looks like and what it would look like for schools and the partnership we would like to have through that process. So hopefully everyone's had an opportunity to see that and familiar with those processes. We've been working closely with schools, and as a general rule, it's been a positive relationship and very productive. And we're pleased with how everything's going. We're of course not pleased with where the state is at in terms of COVID cases, and we're not pleased with the impact that that has upon schools. I know there's a lot of schools being impacted very significantly by the disease burden and the requirements and expectations surrounding our response to that disease burden. And so I know that's taxing upon the school systems, it's taxing upon our local and county health departments. And so we're we're always examining what we're doing and trying to find ways to move forward. We don't we've not changed any policy at this point, but we're certainly looking at methods and mechanisms for making it more integrated and functional in the burden that we're seeing right now and the circumstances of the burden that we're seeing right now. So we do have something of a disseminated model in our health department. And so you'll see different counties and different local health departments that have flexibility in how they handle it. We, of course, have jurisdiction through those county health departments over most of the state, but we do not, we do have the Oklahoma City County Health Department and the Tulsa County Health Department, which are independent jurisdictions. I work closely with Bruce Dart and Phil Maytubby and others in those departments, and we feel like we are trying to be very consistent in what we communicate across the state, but there is that opportunity for the local folks to try to figure out what works better for them and what those different approaches may look like. I know that Tulsa County Health Department and I believe Oklahoma City County Health Department as well have both sought to cultivate a relationship where schools actually kind of initiate the case investigation and contact identification proactively and at the first notification of cases. And then the school then kind of takes the lead and involves those health departments in making the determinations and decisions and communication. I've heard from them that that's working well. Again, it's outside of my jurisdiction, so I can't know all the ins and outs of that. Quite honestly, with the numbers and the challenges that we're seeing throughout the rest of the state, we are probably looking at moving in that direction somewhat ourselves. We certainly want that to be a relationship that the schools and the local health departments are comfortable with, but we've certainly had some concerns from schools that we were being forceful, we were, you know, over assertive or whatever. In that regard, we want to be respectful of that, and not, we always want it to be a complimentary and positive relationship. And so we had always sought to sort of lay it out that we were taking those roles and responsibilities so the school didn't have to. But to the extent that the schools seek to have those roles and be more proactive and responsible on their own right, we're talking about ways that would, what that would look like and the ways that we can facilitate that. We've also had some communication challenges. Oh, sorry. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, could you focus also on the purpose of quarantining? And that's something that we know we have had a lot of media public awareness around the effectiveness of masks. But I would like to hear from you as a message about what is the purpose of quarantining? We hear people talk about, well, their kids are healthy, why should they quarantine? And just the role that quarantining places or takes in a pandemic particularly.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. That's a good point. We absolutely view quarantine as essential in terms of controlling this this pandemic. And it varies with disease by disease. And that's an important thing to recognize. For some diseases that are very symptomatic for the vast majority of people who are affected by that disease, and if shedding begins only at the onset of symptoms, then quarantine becomes not particularly important because shedding begins at the symptom onset. We see the symptoms. Okay, those are the people that pose a risk, and we simply need to isolate those. But SARS-CoV-2 is quite different in the fact that symptoms are not always present, and particularly that appears to be the case in children particularly when they get a lower dose of the virus. And so I'll chase a little bit of a rabbit here, but I do want folks to understand that certainly when you look at the case counts, when you look at the hospitalization counts, when you look at the fatality counts, when you look at the significant impacts of disease, children, very thankfully, are underrepresented in those numbers. As a general rule, the infection does not have a notable impact on children as much so as it does on adults. But there's most assuredly a dose response situation. And that plays a role in our desires for isolation and quarantine as well. In other words, if you get a relatively small dose of this virus, then you have you're more likely to have less severe disease. If you get an overwhelming exposure to this virus, you're more likely to have more severe disease. And that exposure is cumulative and can build up over time. And so it's one thing to be exposed to one infectious person. It's notably different to have a larger number of infected persons within a confined area and getting a lot of contamination. And so that's one thing that we think really drove the severe consequences that we saw in long-term care facilities early in the pandemic. We most assuredly, those older individuals are exquisitely susceptible to this, and you're going to have more severe disease in those individuals. But we also had situations where they were in confined areas and you were getting an overwhelming exposure in those facilities. And now that we're getting to the point that we're controlling that better in those long-term care facilities, you're seeing less severe disease. And we have concerns about that in the school situations as well, just creating a very heavy burden of exposure. And so it's critical that we quarantine people because they can be shedding virus even before they have symptoms or in the absence of symptoms. And they can produce or contribute to that accumulation of exposure that will ultimately produce more severe disease, even in the children, and certainly transmit it within the school and disseminate it into the community, which all those kids enter into afterward.
I've got a question for you, Dr. Henry, and to Joy's question about the quarantining. So you mentioned the simulated model and the different, some of the feedback that I've received, and I believe I speak for some of my colleagues as well, from superintendents and school districts, has been the varying messages that they're getting in specifically in regards to quarantining, sometimes even within the same county. So can you talk a little more about this disseminated model you mentioned? I'm not talking about Oklahoma or Tulsa County now, but the rest of the state. Thank you.
So I guess what I would say is certainly we want the policies to be as consistent and reproducible and fair as possible throughout the state, while also being open to flexibility depending upon the individual circumstance. And I'm sure that we've made mistakes. I know we've made mistakes and had inconsistencies that's our fault and that we're responsible for. But there's also sometimes some biases that get introduced into these situations where two schools may feel like they had the same situation and yet got handled very differently. But when you actually did the case investigation, you determined that there were notable differences between those two scenarios and those two schools. And so not to say that that's the only source of this inconsistency that you're speaking of, but it's certainly one possibility of what's being seen. The regulation should be consistent in terms of once a contact has been determined, once a person has been identified as an effective contact, they need to be quarantined for 14 days past the most recent exposure. Now, when that most recent exposure can vary depending on how quickly the test result communicated to us. And if they're in a household, then they're gonna continue to be exposed even throughout that case's infectious period. And so the 14 days should be a fixed interval, and yet it can vary depending on when the clock starts. We should be isolating cases for 10 days, and that's a fixed number, but can vary depending on when the clock starts as well. In terms of what that looks like with the disseminated model, it really is going to be driven by the relationship between the local and county health department and the school. And so we would certainly aspire that there be no discrepancies in across the state, period, right? We would desire that. We would expect that there ought to be no discrepancies within a county other than what the schools within the county request for there to be in terms of their involvement and their responsibility. And so just to start out, what we're looking at potentially rolling out this week or next week is the opportunity, not the responsibility, but the opportunity for the county health officials to work with the schools in terms of communication. We've got a statewide communication system that is driven by text messaging with the potential for follow-up phone calls. That works well in populations of people who are relatively contained and small. When you start talking about a school outbreak where you may have a larger number of exposures, you have the potential for there to be some inconsistency in communication there, if nothing else, just of when the message gets delivered to the person and what they understand the message to be. And so we are looking at moving that communication step to potentially be in conjunction with the school, that the school can provide a letter. The letter comes from the health department. It's branded with the health department. It contains the information of 14 days and got the dates, and we would provide all of that information. But we may be working with schools for them to disseminate that to the parents as a form of information rather than relying on text messaging, which may end up going to the student's text cell phone, as an example, and not be particularly helpful, right? And so, and that letter can be distributed however the school thinks works best. That may be through the student's portal electronically. It may be mailed to the parents. It may be handed to the parents at child pickup. Whatever the school feels is the best and most effective distribution manner. So that would be the first step that we're looking at to try to improve that consistency, is potentially moving away from our text-based call bank, call center that, again, works really well for the state, but just we've not felt that it worked very well for the schools in getting the information out as quickly and as uniformly and consistently to parents as we'd like. So that would be the first step. And then as we build that relationship and the schools become familiar with, well, what's a contact look like? What's your criteria for that? What are you basing that upon? Then it may have the opportunity to cultivate out to where the schools can say, well, we know where they were at. We know as soon as the parents know, the parents are notifying us very quickly. We can basically start that investigation, ask all the questions that you're asking, and get that done quicker than what the county health department can. And in those situations, we would be looking at saying, that's great. Please proceed with that. Communicate with us. If you guys adopt and move to the dashboard, you know, that's a method of communication and information relay to us. And we would allow the schools to take that initiative more aggressively. If the schools feel overwhelmed and they don't want to be tackling that, we're not looking to push that off on them. At this point, we just want to give them the opportunity to be as proactive and involved and engaged as they would like to be.
Well, I applaud that. Thank you for that answer and articulation. I think this would be a great step in the right direction based on the feedback I've gotten. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. And I would also like to just follow up that your point, Dr. Taylor, is so worth underscoring about how things might appear to a school official as exactly the same as the opposing football team, let's use that as an example, and yet with different steps taken afterwards, and that is likely not the case because we don't as education officials have the public health background or the expertise or all the information that our public health departments at the state and local level have. So I'm glad that you pointed that out and that that is something for the education community. We're all still learning. A lot of people are really consuming a lot of information right now, and yet we know that the relationship between their local health officials at the county level is just paramount in these as this is touch and go and moving swiftly.
Yeah, and you know, to your point of the variation and inability to appreciate and know that variation, schools should be communicating with the local and county health department and providing us information, and that's fine and that's appropriate, and we desire that and we request that. Schools should not basically be sharing personal health information across school districts or to other folks. And there's a number of reasons for that, but sometimes it's just this consistency of information. And so we've had, not to pound on anyone, but you know, you bring up the obvious example, football teams. And we've had football teams that call each other and say, hey, we've got a case, it was number 71, and you know, he played this many plays or whatever. And A, that's definitely information that should not be communicated in that manner. And B, you know, the when we come in and do that investigation, we do have more complete information and sometimes just straight up more accurate information than the school had. And that changes that investigation. And then again, those two coaches or staffs or superintendents may go back and talk to each other, or they may hear through a third party, oh, well, you had this many students and they had something different. And it seems there's an inconsistency there, but it's because there's an incomplete picture being viewed. Again, that's not to let us off the hook and say we've never done anything wrong, we've never had inconsistencies. I assure you that we're aware that we've had some failures. But we're working hard to minimize those, and it's not always as maybe straightforward as it may appear.
Are there other questions? We have maybe just 1 minute left before we're going to need to thank Dr. Taylor. Well, I just want to say how grateful I am for the partnership that we have with you. It is so helpful to be able to meet as regularly as we do at state agency to state agency, working to then help bring issues to you or take information back out to districts. And we really are grateful for the partnership. It's been very, very positive, and we appreciate your willingness to jump on these types of meetings and Zoom calls, as I know your plate is very full for those 24 hours you have each day.
Well, we appreciate the relationship as well, and I want to extend that to everyone here and say, always feel free to tell anyone in the education realm, the superintendents, principals, parents, teachers, whomever, feel free to reach out to us. We want this to be an open communication. And we know there's heterogeneity across the education districts and even within a school, right? I mean, when we talk about a school did something, well, there's a large number of people that are involved there. And so we want to hear as many opinions, thoughts, and considerations as we can, be as open and receptive to those as possible. And so please never hesitate to reach out to either your local health department or directly to me, and I'll be glad to discuss those situations with you and help in any way we can. Thank you so much for having me. I'm going to go ahead and step off, and you guys have a good day.
All right. Thank you so much. All right. Then also, we have Superintendent Jerry Gilstrap, who is with us today, who is going to bring a report just of her experience, how things are going. As you know, we were able to, we had a request last month for Tulsa Public Schools to address you, to share some of the issues that they are facing and working through. And we thought it would be very good to continue that and have more of our professionals and experts in the education field to present again at this board meeting. And Dr. Gilstrup, would you go ahead and please address the board, tell us a little bit about how things are going, a little bit about your district. I think that would be nice to set the stage. And then we're eager to hear your thoughts and remarks.
Sure, and thank you. Can you hear me this morning, Superintendent?
Yeah.
All right, good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for having me this morning. That we are finding faith in this battle, I will tell you that. And I would commend the State Department and Superintendent Hoffmeister for our touch base calls each week and for including so much guidance. And I know they've worked endlessly hours and hours on giving us guidance, and we appreciate that because we have stuck to those. And I feel like that our district has been pretty successful up to this point, other than living under the grace of God and protection. We have followed those guidelines, and I feel like they have worked at this point. Well, and to be respectful of your time, I'm going to go through, I made notes because we've worked for hours too on the procedures and the protocols that we've put into place, and it's hard to disseminate all of that without notes because we've worked so hard. But we began in really late April or beginning of May to design our reentry plans, and then we put out a video of what those protocols were going to look like. And of course, everyone knew that was a living document because the requirements were changing daily. So we put a video out to the stakeholders as well to let them know this is how what it was going to look like if we could come back to in person, and got input. And so that worked really well, and I think kind of set everybody more at ease. We had to update policies, online instruction, our virtual learning academy. And by the way, we've jumped from 6 to 8 kids that we normally had online to 255. So we are a very rural area. We have around 1,400 kids. We are one of the highest, if not number one, we're number two in child poverty in the state. And so we depend on a lot of impact aid. We depend on things like that. So that's kind of an overview of who we are out here in northeastern Oklahoma, Stillwell, Oklahoma. So we also did professional development to kind of piggyback on the epidemiologist. We had a day in July where the whole staff did professional development with the state health department. And so we had Delby Walker and Joan Lang, who we Zoomed with. And I think it really set my my teachers and my staff more at ease because they had a immersion into COVID and the symptoms and what to expect and what to look for and those kind of things. And then a follow-up was that with that, they sent us a checklist that we put out in letter form to all of our stakeholders for the parents to ask themselves before they sent their child to class or decided to go virtual or be in person, to ask them, do they have these symptoms? And then not sending them to school if they were not feeling well or had any of the symptoms. We have our plans posted on our website. We have a transparency COVID case spreadsheet on our website that tracks what is going on with our district. I will tell you and give a shout out to Chuck McCauley in Bartlesville because I stole his spreadsheet. That's what good teachers do. And so, and we've shared that, he shared that with a lot of people, but that keeps our community up to date. We also had to install lots of water bottle filling stations because we had a few, but not all. We've turned off all our fountains. And so everybody that was part of our plan that we put on the video, you know, everybody has to have a water bottle and we're not going to share. We try not to share supplies. We have supplied teachers with masks, with shields, with sanitizer. I think our buildings have never, ever been this clean, but we're very proud of that, and we've worked really hard on that. The teachers are cleaning the desks in between hours. They all have their own spray bottles. They have their own supplies. They have hand sanitizer for themselves and their students in their rooms, so they're cleaning hourly between classes. The younger levels, they are cleaning between activities, you know, depending on the grade levels when we're cleaning. We have a cleaning company that comes in every single night and thoroughly cleans. And then we have day porters, of course, that resupply the hand sanitizer, all of the things that we're using on a daily basis. We've got protocol posters from CDC posted everywhere. So I think my lower levels have laminated those and put them on the walls. We're doing temp checks at the door before anyone enters. And we are also doing temp checks at the athletic events that we're holding. Masks are mandatory. We made that decision early on, and they're not, they're for everyone. So we've got preschoolers on the playground in masks, and it's just become part of their daily structure, and they're wearing them. The lower grades, they have the masks that have the clear panels here so that they can, and that's very important for the teachers. I mean, you're teaching phonics, you want them to see you smile, because those relationships and that engagement is so important at that level. And so everybody has a mask on, and it's just become part of our daily attire. My older students, it's become a fashion statement, I would say. And I think sometimes instead of saying, "Oh, I think your shoes are so cute today," they will say, "Where'd you get that mask? I really like your mask." And so you cannot enter a building, you cannot get on a bus, you cannot enter an event without your temp being checked and that you have a mask on. Of course, we're hand washing as much as possible, hand sanitizers everywhere, ventilation also. We listen to that guidance, and that's very important. And we took a little bit of flack in the beginning over ventilation, because we were putting kids on a school bus, and it's Oklahoma, right? And so we've been in school since August 12th, and knock on wood, we're still here. So we were putting the windows down for ventilation. And so we did get a few phone calls, and I think my board members got a few phone calls, you know, "Do we not have buses with air conditioning?" Well, we do. We do. So we're cracking windows, we're running the air conditioner. The rooms in the school buildings, they're putting their windows down as much as possible. We're fortunate in that most of our classrooms have windows so that we can get some air and get some ventilation in. We are not opening up our campus to any outside use of our facilities, which we normally do in abundance, but we are not doing that. We're not allowing visitors outside of our normal people or our professional development people that are making sure that we're well versed in COVID. So we've shut that down. And then anybody that does come in, of course, does have to wear a mask. Our extracurricular activities, we're not having any of the extra events, which is really sad for the kids, but they're so thrilled to be here. I think at this point, if I said wear a mask, stand in the corner on your head, you know, drink water upside down, they would do it. They're so thrilled to just be in school. And so our extracurricular activities are going very well. We have bombarded our stakeholders with PSAs on, you know, over the system, saying if you would like to continue to be here and be able to watch, then you're going to have to wear your mask. My admin's on board, and they've been at every game, no matter what level, you know, admin they are at. They're at all the games to roam and make certain that people have masks on. And we've just made a decision that we can ask someone to leave. We've not had to do that because they're so excited to be out of their house and to be watching a game or an event. So that's gone actually very well. We have, even though we're rural and we're poverty area, we decided to spend the money to stream our events live. And so we've done that. And so that has cut down on how many people are actually at the events, because they can sit in their home. And a lot of our elderly people, that's what they're doing. They're watching it from home. We have an LPN on staff that I cannot say enough about. She's worked tirelessly, and she's researched, and she's read, and she's gone to meetings with me. And I'm especially thankful for her. We have an LPC on staff because we have a lot of trauma. It's a poverty area, and we have children with trauma. And so I think our LPC on staff was a good decision. And we have SEL support then for those kids, whether they're virtual, and we do wellness checks with those kids. So that's worked well for us. We cohorted our littles, our 3 and 4 year olds. They've stayed in cohorts to avoid exposure, and so they're eating in their rooms. They're wearing their little masks with their panels, even on the playground. That really the only mask exceptions that we have are our severe special needs children that really truly can't wear one. And we also have a school daycare. I didn't mention that. And so in the beginning we were, that was worrisome because they're little. And, but that's gone really well. We're just sanitizing everything. And, you know, that's hard when they put things in their mouth. But we've tirelessly worked, and they're isolated in a separate building. So that has helped a lot. It's our Boys and Girls Club 21st Century Building after school. And so the daycare's there in the day completely by just them. And they've got the whole run of the building. So that's worked out well to be able to space. And then they leave, and all of my children come in then after school. So a lot of cleaning going on in that building. We have 2 cafeterias, so that's made it easier for us. And we've just, you know, one of our sayings now is, you know, if the wheels start to fall off, then you better find a lug wrench. We're just trying to be innovative and try to do whatever we can do to make it work. So we have redone our lunch schedules, all of our eating schedules. We are Northeast Oklahoma, so we're green country, and we do have a beautiful campus, and it's big. So we can do a lot of things outside. We have a lot of children that are eating outside. We've staggered our breakfast and our lunch. And in the elementary, they're typical cafeteria tables, and we're putting them on an outside bench, and then no one sits on the bench across. And so they're all facing basically away from the kitchen towards a wall. So every bench is to the back of another person. Does that make sense? And so we're spacing them out on the benches and then facing them all in one direction. So we've just really had to get in the weeds with how we can do it to give them hot meals, because we didn't want them eating sandwiches every day. So far it has worked, and staggering. It took a lot of scheduling, but it's worked. I think my biggest surprise through all of this was the total adherence to what we asked people to do, because we were loaded for bear. We were ready to say, you need to put a mask on, you know, you've got a choice to go virtual or be in person. But the community, I mean, they are dropping off their kids. I've got admin standing out with umbrellas to help babies out of the car. They're masked up with their little water bottles and their backpacks and ready to go. So it's worked well. Our county numbers, we are not yellow. We are not green. We started school orange level 2. And so you have no idea how thankful we were and we are for those touch-based meetings, for the training that we received, for the partnership with the health department, which Amanda Elfazami is our county person. But we live in the heart of Cherokee Nation. Cherokee Nation also has their own epidemiologist over 14 counties. He's stellar. Our health department, state health department, works with our Cherokee Nation. And so we are very fortunate in that our staff, if they work at school and they show their ID, they can go to Wilma P or Hastings and get a rapid test and know the results in an hour. And so not everyone can say that, not every county, but because we are the heart of Cherokee Nation, we've we've been in close contact with them. We also had a training with them besides the state health department where the epidemiologists came in and trained. We set it up for our whole county. So trained the admin from Adair County and Cherokee County as well. On what to look for, when to quarantine. And I think because we started out early educating our stakeholders after we were educated, that has made a huge, just a terrific difference. Because as of today, we've had really 6 cases. And out of those cases, 2 have been teachers, 4 have been children. One of the students is a virtual student, so they were already at home. The other 3 students were already home as well. And so we had very little exposure because they were positive because someone in their family had tested positive. And so they had the foresight to keep that child home when the person within their family didn't feel well. So, and then we've had to contact Trace, and Cherokee Nation has been very supportive in helping do that as well. The epidemiologist has my cell phone number. I have his, as well as the county health department. So I really think because we started early educating what this looks like and what we need to do, that it's been helpful. We are barely orange level 1, but we don't care. It's a victory that we've gone down to orange level 1, but we're really hoping, you know, we're staying the course. We're keeping all of these recommendations. We're doing the same, you know, we're following the same protocols because so far it has worked. And so we feel like in an orange level 2 or orange level 1 county, when we've only had this many positive cases and we've been able to manage it, then it's been a victory. So I think circumstances do very much vary from district to district. Go ahead. Sorry, Superintendent.
Superintendent Gilstrap, thank you so very much for really laying out a blueprint for success. And I am so grateful. I wonder if any of our plants, it's just been really exciting to see your success. Board members?
I'm more than anything, thank you, Superintendent, for being here. I really appreciate your presentation and kind of everything. And first want to thank you and your staff for I know that an enormous amount of effort has gone into the plan that you kind of outlined. I have a 5 and a 6-year-old, and so I know, I agree as far as the littles, they're wearing masks like champs and doing a lot of the same things. Their school's doing a lot of the same things that you've been doing and has seen success with it as well. So don't necessarily have a question, but just wanted to thank you for your presentation and for all of the effort that you've put into keeping your kids safe.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you all for having me and for being so supportive. I know this has just been stressful for everyone. And we do get a little preachy over here. So I'm just going to say Isaiah 40:31 says we will walk and not faint. And that's really what we've done. And besides the scientific and the education part of this with COVID, we've really relied heavily on being together in prayer and just praying protection over our kids. And we want you to know that we've prayed for each and every one of you as well, and our national leaders as well, because this is just unprecedented. And it took a lot of effort, but each child, every single child that we have is well worth it.
Jerry, I just want to also echo those thoughts of Jennifer's. Thank you for everything. And, you know, I was always taught that as goes the leadership, so goes the following. So please continue to lead well. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. Well, if you guys are done with me, Superintendent, I'm going to go to work. So I'm going to jump off here, but blessings to all of you and have a great day.
Thank you for joining us. Appreciate it. Take care. All right. Very good. And board members, now we have on our agenda item 2B, which is discussion and possible action on the minutes of the August 27th, 2020 special state board meeting. Is there a motion to approve those?
I'll make a motion to approve them.
Second.
Okay, did you see? All right, you heard that. Very good. We have a proper motion and second. Any comments or questions? Okay, seeing none, please call the roll.
Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bollenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobeck?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister?
Aye. All right, thank you. That motion carries. Okay, very good. And at this time, I want to highlight someone very special. Shelley Perkins is the grant manager here at the State Department of Education. And she is someone who began her work at the State Department in 2015 as a coordinator one for the Office of Educator Effectiveness. She is our employee of the month this month, and we wanna honor her, and I wanna tell you just a little bit about Shelley. She has also held the events coordinator position before coming to her current job of grants manager here in the department. Her nominator said, in addition to her job as the agency grant manager, where she manages 15 federal grants totaling more than $60 million, Shelley took on two extra responsibilities over the summer and has worked tirelessly over the course of the past 4 months. She assumed the role as the manager of the CARES Act incentive grants, ultimately awarding 150 school districts $16 million. Shelley also took on a similar task to provide hotspots, 50,000 of those, to Oklahoma school districts. She has put in, needless to say, long hours since May to really get these sub-grants awarded and to serve as the agency's responder to all questions fielded from the districts on how to apply for and manage these funds. Shelley is the best. And that is all a quote from the one who nominated her, but I echo that. Shelley, we are proud to have you on our team, absolutely. I know you're with us today. Would you have a few words to offer and just let me say thank you on behalf of everyone in the agency and the state board.
Oh, thank you, Superintendent. Hello.
Yes.
Okay. Hi. I just want to say thank you, Superintendent.
Yes, we hear you.
I appreciate you all so very much, and I'm just very honored and very grateful to be part of this amazing team. And every day I get up and I'm just excited to work for the state and for our students across the state. And every day is exciting, and I just want to help everyone that I can. And I usually try to hide in the background and just make sure everything goes well. And again, I am very humbled, and I appreciate you all, and thank you. I'm honored.
Oh, thank you so much. We appreciate you, and it's good to get to highlight the great people who are here.
Thank you.
We also want to highlight.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Also, I want to bring special attention to our Chief Financial Officer, Mathangi Shankar. Mathangi began her state service at the Oklahoma State Department of Health in 1995. We are honoring her today for 25 years of service, and I have with us today to give to Mathangi her certificate as well, which is signed by the governor. And so we'll be sharing this with you and your PIN for 25 years of service as well. But I want to tell you a little bit about Mathangi before we ask her to address you all. In that 25 years, she has had varied experience in financial management at multiple state agencies, including the Department of Health, as I mentioned, the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse, and the Oklahoma Insurance Department. In 2011, Matheny joined the State Department of Ed, and she says she was excited to join the team and learn education, finance, and policy. As the chief financial officer for the department, Matheny is responsible for all of the agency's financial functions, including accounting, budgeting, and audits. We congratulate Matheny, who also serves as my proxy on the teacher retirement board. She is also serving on the investment committee with the land commission, as I'm one of the five officers for the commission of the land. And we just are grateful for your 25 years of service and really honored to have you. Matheny, would you please have just a moment to just tell us a little bit about those 25 years, and then we're so grateful that you are with us on this team in this important role.
Good morning, Superintendent. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. So it's truly an honor to get this recognition from you. Thank you, board members. I'm just grateful for the opportunity I got like 25 years ago at the State Health Department. Every agency that I worked with, I have such wonderful experiences. It gave me an opportunity to learn and grow professionally. And as I said, coming to education, I was very excited. Just being part of the team, I have, I'm so impressed by the some dedicated professionals that I get to work with every day. And of course, I want to give a big shout out to my financial services team, who I work with every single day, and they are amazing. They definitely work so hard and make me look good. So anyway, thank you all so very much.
Thank you. And board members, any comments or questions for Matheny?
Thank you so much for all that you've done over the years.
Thank you. It was very rewarding and I enjoyed every minute of it.
We appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Sure.
I just also want to mention that it is really tough when you go through general revenue failures. That doesn't happen very often in our state, and it's happened twice just in the last 6 years. Less than 6 years. And here at the department, Matheny has led us through that. And it's just absolutely remarkable, the work that you have done. Thank you again. And I again appreciate you and the team.
Thank you. All right.
Thank you. All right, board members, in the remarks that I would just love to give with you a little update. According to the most recent report of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, we see that Oklahoma is sixth highest in the nation on rates of positive cases, with 101 or more new cases per 100,000. And we are third for test positivity. So it was great to hear from Jerry Gilstrap at and we are grateful for other leaders all across the state, leading school districts, and the care that they are giving to their school community. She's a great example. This report then that we are all reflecting on that comes from the White House on a weekly basis, this is the one dated for September 20th. So it looks at the previous week, and it indicates that 68% of our counties have moderate or high levels of community transmission, while the remaining 32% have the highest levels of transmission. Recommendations include ensuring mask utilization statewide to prevent unnecessary transmission of deaths and those in vulnerable communities. So I have a slide to show you in relation to that. We conducted an informal survey to check districts, kind of keep an update on some of their policies and those related to mask requirement of some sort. The percentage has bumped up from last month. I just lost my screen. Hold on just a moment. Sorry about that. There we go. Okay, the percentage has bumped up, as I mentioned, with 78% of districts now having mask requirements for staff, students, visitors, or some combination thereof. We will continue to cross-reference data, board members, so that we can keep you and Oklahomans informed of these policies statewide. We also have, yes.
Superintendent Hoffmeister, I don't know if you're about to get to it, that's fine. I know one of the things that we talked about last time was, is there a way to know, I know that that's 78% of districts. Do we know the percentage of students that are represented by those 78%?
I only have one slide to show you today, and we don't have a slide to represent that, but that is a great slide to bring. So yes, we'd love to have that. And there could be a way for us to do that. Once the October 1 counts are in place, we'll have a better, some better information on student enrollment and can give you that. That sounds very good. So we're gonna be digging through that data, and we'll be able to disaggregate other data points and information to bring to the board in the future. Thank you. Okay, are there any questions about that before I switch topics? All right. Well, OSDE has been awarded 5 federal grants totaling more than $17 million this month and in the past several weeks. I can tell you about 4 of them this morning. We are waiting for official award on a 5th, so I hope to have even more information in the coming days. Oklahoma Aware East Grant is a 5-year grant for almost $9 million. Under this grant, we will partner with the Oklahoma Department of Health and Substance Abuse Services to adopt an integrated mental health approach for nearly 5,000 students and families in 3 Eastern Oklahoma districts. Those selected as part of the grant application were Ada, Atoka, and Chakota. The second grant awarded by the U.S. Department of Education will create online art classes for students with limited or no access to the arts or arts programming. The 5-year Art Tech grant is nearly $6 million. The OSDE also received an almost $350,000 supplement to our Get Fit grant. OSDE received the Get Fit grant in 2018 from the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention. It focuses on healthy lifestyles for students, and the supplement will provide technical assistance to school nurses and physical education teachers on how to safely conduct physical education during COVID. Finally, a U.S. Department of Agriculture 2-year grant of nearly $100,000 will fund the FRESH project, which seeks to increase fresh produce consumption in schools in southeastern Oklahoma in particular. The project will partner school nutrition staff with farmers to provide healthy produce in schools to increase student participation in school meals and expand public support for child and school nutrition programs. I want to turn your attention to a really important area which we have focused on with our schools because of a great need. COVID-19 has severely impacted the blood supply. More than 30% of total donations in Oklahoma are typically typically come from donors associated with education groups, which means that our school-based blood drives are critical. Since the pandemic started, the Oklahoma Blood Institute has had 1,400 blood drives canceled. That equals about 30,000 units of blood lost. So OBI is encouraging schools to hold blood drives now that school is back in session, even if the school is virtual right now. They have ways to work it so that they can take measures to ensure that those donations are and that process is as safe as possible. High schools have been very successful place in the past for the Oklahoma Blood Institute to hold those blood drives, and they want to encourage school leaders to welcome donors from the community as well. So we are very, very hopeful that our school districts will get that message and not cancel those important and critical blood drives during this pandemic. So I hope that that's helpful for you to hear. If you have any questions, I'm happy to entertain that. All right. Well, without seeing any questions, let's go ahead and I'll ask our secretary if there, or our legal counsel, if there was any public comments for today.
We did not have any today.
All right, thank you. Okay, first item to consider now that we are into the meat of this board meeting is the consent docket. And we have, that is item 5A, B, C, D, E, and through H. How would you like to entertain and review the items on this docket?
And Superintendent, board members, just before we get going with this particular item or set of items, I would request that we table, I believe it's sub-item C on library media services. The agenda does not actually reflect the request, and we apologize. We've communicated that to the school districts, no fault of their own. It's a mistake on my part, and we will bring these back following month.
Very good. Thank you, Beth. All right. So, board members, do you want to take these one at a time?
What do you want?
All right, I'll ask, is there a motion to
approve? I don't have anything until.
Are you going to do
a
thing? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, is there a motion to approve item 5A?
We have a discussion piece, I think, Joy.
Oh, I
can get to it whenever we get down.
Okay, if we take them each letter, that's fine.
We're taking it, we're breaking it apart then, okay.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to approve 5A.
I will second, and I will just, sorry, it's saying our internet is unstable. I don't know if that's, can y'all hear me?
That's, yes, we can hear you.
I was just going to, I was going to thank Ryan. We've had, some discussions around some of these, kind of offline, different questions that we've had on a number of these applications. And so just want to thank him for his due diligence in getting us additional research from districts and ensuring that we have everything in front of us to help us make the right decision on these. So thank him.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion or questions? All right, please call the roll.
Ms. Williams-Bradley?
Aye.
Mr. Bollenbach?
Aye.
Mr. Flanagan?
Aye.
Ms. Hernandez?
Aye.
Ms. Moniz?
Aye.
Mr. Bobeck?
Aye.
Superintendent Hoffmeister.
Aye. All right. Could you hear everything there?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Some of the screens are frozen, so I just wasn't sure. All right. Then item number 5B. and this has to do with alternative education programs. Is there